The Guardian.
The lift is a claustrophobic nightmare. A steel box, complete with clankings and buzzings, ascends slowly, slowly, ever so slowly, to the roof. I'm standing on top of the Queen Elizabeth Hall, under the iron skies of the London summer, next to an improbable boat, perched impossibly on the roof, looking for all the world as if it's poised to dive into the Thames below. The boat, modelled on the Roi des Belges, the riverboat Joseph Conrad sailed up the River Congo in 1890, has been captained for the last 3 days by the writer Alain Mabancourt. Born in Congo Brazzaville in 1966, Mabancourt spent 15 years living in Paris, where he began to publish a series of exuberant novels in an African-inflected French which tangle with the greats of French literature and bring to life the Africans often sidelined by the Western tradition. Winner of the Prix Renaudot in 2006 with his Mémoire de Porc-Épic, and awarded the Légion d'Honneur only last year, he now splits his time between Paris and Los Angeles, where he's a professor of French literature at UCLA. Let's see how he's been enjoying London's cloud, rain and wind.
It sounds like I'm in the Congo River and it's raining, but at any case, I feel good. I'm protected. I'm like surrounded by Joseph Conrad, so that's fine for me, even if it's raining.
And you find him a friendly presence. He's a nice companion on board, is he?
Yes, he's a nice companion, but at some time we used to discuss about why he didn't take the time to emphasize on African population just taking care of his travel.
Chinua Achebe thought that he treated the Africans who appear, particularly in Heart of Darkness, as less than human. It's almost it's something that seems to me is almost your writing project is almost directly opposed to that. You've been trying to find the voices of the Africans that Conrad ignored. Do you feel that he's somebody who should be pushed back against, or is he somebody who should be welcomed on board?
I think that he should be welcome on board, and we need this kind of point of view. We want to see how European people at that time were looking at Africans. And thanks to that, we have now African literature, which is helping us to go deeply in the spirit of African people. And I cannot like condemn Conrad because of the fact that he went over there and remain in his boat and didn't take part of this kind of excitement in the population. That's now our job as African writers. We need to explain to the people that we don't want to be like people who are just looking things from far. We need to go in the arena and to fight, to struggle. Literature is a kind of fight, is a kind of struggle. And Conrad couldn't fight like we are fighting, but he did a good job in the sense of he helped us to understand that we have a lot of job to do.
So you're now taking up the baton, you're filling in the gaps, mm-hmm. You're making the life that he didn't take the time to see come to life, making it live.
I think that it's going to be the same thing if I came to London. I cannot understand the spirit of people here. It takes time to understand what people are thinking, what is the spirit of the people. And my writing is about that struggle. I want to explain to people how we are suffering over there, how we are fighting in order to get something to eat every time, every day, and how the dictatorship is like pushing people to become like madmen and so on and so on.
Yep. I'm wondering, you've got this beautiful view of the Thames, of St. Paul's, of the city of London. I'm wondering how that view, how the Thames from up here compares with the polluted River Mayi in African Psycho, or the Chinooka River where the narrator's mother drowns herself in broken glass, or indeed that great river of the French language which you have fun diverting so much.
Yes, of course. Each time I'm in front of a river, I used to think about my own Congo River or my own small river called Lukula, in which in African Psycho you saw a mother drawing in it and dying over there. It remains for me, as the Thames remain for me a kind of small river compared to Congo River. And sometimes I say, why Europeans are calling that river compared to like the Congo River? But that's the fact. And I have to admit it, it's close to my country anyway, except the buildings surrounding the neighborhood.
Have you been watching the passers-by? Does London street style measure up to the dandies of Paris, those the sapeurs of Gypt's Afro-Cuban bar in Les Halles, in Black Bazaar?
I'm trying. And sometimes I used to find a lot of people here wearing nice ties and well-dressed with nice suit and so on and so on. But they are not sapeur, because being a sapeur is a spirit. You have to live just for wearing nice shirts, nice suits and so on and so on. But at any case, most of our trousers, most of our shirts came from London. So we used to come here to take a lot of clothes in order to invent this kind of tradition called La Sape. La Sape is built by London. Maybe they don't know, but we are here to let them know that you have something, but you ignore that you have a power of making people happy.
So what have you been thinking of in your time here with Conrad as your shipmate?
I've been thinking, first of all, about the essay I've been writing here.
You've written an essay rather than poetry or any fiction.
It's a non-fiction about like a part of history in Africa.
And this is something that you've been thinking about for a long time, or something that just came to you when you visited the city where Conrad wrote Height of Darkness?
I think that it came to me right now, these last days. I didn't think that before. You know, living here in this kind of duplication of the Roi de Belge, the boat, you have to think about that. You have everything here. The picture of the Congo River is just behind this window.
And maybe we should open that up now.
We should open that and see. If you open, you want to see the river. You open the second window.
There's two windows.
Yes. And then you're going to see he is the king of the Belgium over there, Leopold II. I was like fascinated by his beard, seeing this kind of old man who looked like Victor Hugo or sometimes like Pushkin. And I said to myself, what is doing here? Maybe to meet with me. That's why I wrote something mentioning his name too.
But do you feel that he owes you any kind of debt? I mean, the regime in the Congo at the time was brutal, awful things happening.
Yes, I think that the Belgian colonization was very, very hard compared to the other colonization. It was a kind of massacre, particularly when they were building the railways. And it was very fatal and crucial to the African population. But at the same time, if you compare Belgium to France, you're going to see that Belgium is recognizing its responsibility in the colonization, while France is still standing aside and thinking that it was a nice thing to go over there and to maltreat African population.
Something that has resonance to this day in the streets of Paris. So have you managed to come to an accommodation with Conrad in your essay?
I try to do my best to see the nice face of the situation. At any case, you know, sometimes you can read a book written like by Ferdinand Céline, who was a bad guy, but he wrote a masterpiece. And that's why I was here, just to try to do my best to write something which is going to criticize a face of that book, but at the same time to recognize that it's one of the best book written in English nowadays. It is Friday, the 13th of July 2012. In many European countries and even in America, Friday the 13th is a day with a curse hanging over it. But Friday the 13th is synonymous with neither bad luck nor misfortune in the imaginations of the people in the country I come from, Congo-Brazzaville, neighbor to Congo-Kinshasa, Joseph Conrad's legendary Heart of Darkness. And that is why, with nothing to fear, I'm going to begin this recording. I have come to London to spend 3 days in a room that is out of the ordinary, perched high above the Queen Elizabeth Hall in a commanding position over the South Bank Centre. When I heard about this location and it was suggested that I might like to spend some time living in it, I nearly laughed out loud while making a mental note that the English really are the grand masters of black humor. I was wrong. Imagine my surprise on finding myself inside this reproduction of the Roi des Belges, the well-known boat in which Joseph Conrad sailed on behalf of the Congo Free State, this being the name of the vast territory over which Leopold II, King of the Belgians, had decided to exert his authority, making it his private possession. This territory was called Zaire during the dictatorship of Mobutu, and today we know it under the name of the Democratic Republic of Congo. Congo-Kinshasa and Brazzaville are separated by the Congo River, but the two cities are among the closest capitals in the world. I am here alone at last inside this replica of the Roi des Belges in London. I feel like I'm in the city, in the very heart of London, and yet I am as isolated as Robinson Crusoe on his island. And so I must control my excitement and mounting sense of curiosity in order to imagine for a little while that I'm on the Congo River, the river of my country, one of the biggest in the world after the Amazon, with its history unrolling before my eyes. Because how can I be in the Roi des Belges, even if this is London, without reflecting on the different dealings that took place in Africa towards the end of the 19th century? These dealings and negotiations plotted the borders of the Africa we recognize today. The shadow of Conrad stalks this room, and I feel as if I'm living with him. I am, of course, surrounded by books and, above all, by different versions of Heart of Darkness, most prominently a graphic novel adaptation by David Zane Merovitz, illustrated by Catherine Anyango. Perhaps at night, Conrad emerges from his pages to tell the forlorn visitor about the odyssey of his character Charles Marlowe, the British merchant navy officer appointed by Belgium, who undertook to navigate a river in my continent. But I shall stop thinking about that and return to it later. For now, I would like to concentrate on what is around me. I have the finest view of the Thames from my little Conradian refuge. On the river, a few vessels pass by, filled with tourists, who give me odd stares and occasionally point at me, probably wondering what on earth a big black man is doing on the roof of this city. They must think a film is being shot up here and that I'm a stuntman dabbling for the lead actor in the crucial scene, unless they are mistaking me for an untalented burglar or even a worker repairing the roof. I go into the salon. There's a secret window to the left, next to the one with glass in it, that lets in the light. I open this secret window and land on a glossary of nautical terms, along with several representations of the Congo River, of which one is a view of the river taken from an aeroplane. The Congo River resembles a long, lazy boa constrictor, undecided but replete, no longer sure which direction to go in. Behind the hidden window, there is a second one, rather like Russian dolls. I open it and discover a black and white image of a poet in exile, like Victor Hugo, when, driven out by Napoleon, he sought refuge in Guernsey to write his pamphleteering volume of poetry, Les Châtiments. Except that this man is not Victor Hugo. Beneath the photo, I read this simple label, Roi des Belges. It is Leopold II, King of the Belgians, the very man who was obsessed with creating a state in the Congo Basin and who relied on the services of the British explorer Henry Morton Stanley, with whom the king struck a deal in 1878, a bit like the character of Charles Marlowe in Conrad's novel, proof that Conrad was largely inspired by Stanley's accounts when he wrote Heart of Darkness. How can we ignore the way this partnership between Leopold II and Stanley heralded this division of Africa? Indeed, Stanley would go on to purchase several tracts of land in the Congo for the King of the Belgians. This land became the king's private property, and later on in honor of the monarch. Stanley would even name a village Leopoldville, which has become the current capital of Congo, Kinshasa. If the Belgians used a British man to grab part of the lands on one of the two banks of the Congo, on the other bank, the French used an Italian origin explorer, Pierre Savonion de Brazza, the man who opened up colonization in Central Africa for France. These then were the two great powers of the time, Belgium and France, who, to extend their influence beyond their territories, required the services of explorers from other powerful nations, Italy and Great Britain. Belgium and France quarreled among themselves for the lands of the Congo, each nation claiming ownership. It took a conference of nations, the famous Berlin Conference in 1884, to appease their appetites. Europe had come together in order to divide up Africa, thereby rubber stamping the colonization of the continent. Belgium took possession of what is now Congo-Kinshasa, and France of Congo-Brazzaville, a territory that is small but rich in oil. I have returned to the bedroom. I'm lying down, holding a copy of Heart of Darkness in French, because it's difficult for me to understand all the English nautical terms used by the author. Conrad isn't far as he watches me turn the pages. I close the book and my thoughts shift to all the criticism leveled against him, notably some very virulent criticism from Chinua Achebe. The Nigerian writer denounces the racism he seems to detect in Conrad, who evokes a dark Africa in his book, where all that can be glimpsed is witchcraft and opaque protagonists, who are not the important characters in the book. They are merely material, the collateral of the author turning his eye to our continent. What matters for Conrad is the long journey. It's the ascent of the Congo River by his main character, who is working for the Belgians. And so there is no introspection, no internal gaze that might help the reader get a sense of the soul of these people. But can we reproach Conrad's attitude now, when in reality it was just a reflection of what Europe thought of Africa, a lost continent in which barbarism was the chief characteristic? Didn't this spirit give birth to what was then called colonial literature, in which Europe explained Africa to the world while Africans themselves were absent from these narratives? For this reason, Conrad didn't hold back from using terms propagated in colonial literature that were often contemptuous, including calling Africans brutes. But we shouldn't blindly condemn this author. He, like his colleagues at the time, is only using Africa as a backdrop in an era when Europeans were thirsty for exoticism, for far-flung voyages to provide color that contrasted with the harshness of their cold climate. What needs acknowledging in Conrad is his caustic view of the abuses of his own civilization, of Western civilization, and so Conrad points his finger at colonialism and its excesses, particularly when he rails against the French bombardments of Dahomey. Other European writers later on will adopt the same spirit of denunciation. I'm thinking of the French writer André Gide and his journal Voyage au Congo, published in 1927. Gide also sailed up the Congo River, but in his writing, he made a point of noting the deplorable conditions in which the colonized peoples lived and held the concessionary Western companies to account. These companies maltreated the native population in what amounted to enforced labor. And such maltreatment was covered up by the colonial administration. Gide's journal appeared, therefore, as an inquiry into these abuses, but the French author didn't question the colonial system. He even believed the authority of the white man to be necessary if the poor Negroes were to avoid a fatal kind of chaos. So people were surprised in 1928 when a politically engaged French author, Albert Londres, published Terre d'Ébène, Land of Ebony, a journal in which he clearly rose up against colonization and accused it of perpetuating a system of slavery in which the Africans were victims, above all at the time of the building of the railways. Naturally, this book was bitterly criticized by a Europe whose expansion depended on colonization thriving. It is late. My eyelids are heavy with sleep, but I'm a bit hungry. And so I get up to go over to the kitchen. I can see the big wheel, a sort of merry-go-round, the English here refer to as the London Eye. Of course, at this hour, a tourist will not be admitted into one of the air-conditioned cabins of the wheel that has become one of the city's star attractions. It was built to celebrate the year 2000, hence its other name, the Millennium Wheel. In other words, the big wheel of the millennium. I picture myself inside it, turning with history, but in the opposite direction, so as to travel back to the period when Conrad was inside the Roi des Belges. What is the connection between this wheel and the boat taken by Conrad? I can't answer that question. Perhaps I have thought too much about the Congo, about colonization, about the voyage along the Congo River. As a result, anything that moves seems to me to be from another time. Life is surely a wheel that turns and may stop at any moment, just like the London Eye. This thought occurs to me as I get back into my bed with what's left of a sandwich in my hand. I'm going to sleep, leaving the windows of this room open. When the first glimmers of dawn light up the sky, I will feel as if the boat I am in is going to berth somewhere in Africa, and that I'll be disembarking to meet new populations. I'll ask them if they have heard of a boat called Le Roi des Belges, and whether they spotted the beard of a writer called Joseph Conrad, who left a masterpiece entitled Heart of Darkness to Posterity.
Great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.